I'm a little worried that you're here, man. This is a copywriting thing, and I don't know, man.
I knew
You're
you were
gonna
going
give
to
me a
say
good.
that.
I was like,
No,
oh
I thought.
shit, Tom and Harry
No,
are there.
well, you'd like to think I know a little bit about copy because I do, make a fairly good living from it. But I thought it would be more from the lens through the CMO, so
Yeah,
like
it
to hear it
is.
from your perspective. So yeah,
Yeah, I just.
I've got my white belt on today.
Okay. I should have just taken like Carlton's kick-ass Secrets of a Copywriting Rebel and just sent it to ChatGPT and just done that and just read it. Maybe that would have been easier. Where'd you learn
I'm sure.
copy?
Man, I've spent so much on courses and things over the years. Just I've got a, I think what I did one of the first programs I bought was Stephen George Eyes RMBC. And then from there I ended up getting a mentor that I just paid monthly and did co private coaching with them. And I've
With
done tons
who?
of different. There's a guy called Matthew Volkit, Volkvane. He's more of an email copywriting specialist, but he's pretty switched on and across all the board. So yeah, I still work with him, to be fair. And yeah, just I think it's probably been about 5 years since I've been writing for clients now. So picked up quite a few bits along the way. I think my Bible books have been Breakthrough Advertising and One Sentence Persuasion. They were just like really helpful with
I haven't read
copywriting.
One Sentence Persuasion.
Yeah, I think it's hard to get a physical copy. You can get the ebook pretty easily. You can get it anyway online. But yeah, I would definitely read that. It's only about 20 pages or something stupid, but it is
Yeah.
just pure gold.
Oh, cool.
And then a lot of like when I was doing more longer form copy, I was researching a lot of like Dan Kennedy and all of his stuff on
Sure.
long form sales copy. So yeah, just a lot of different sources over the years.
Yeah, awesome, man. Love it. Cool. Great. All right, well, we're gonna kick off here in just a minute. Yeah, exactly, Ben. Like we're done here. Yeah, you guys just go study Dan Kennedy for 5 years and then figure out how he died and came back to life, and then you're good. If some of you don't know, Dan Kennedy, great marketer. People were posting obituaries for him. Like, oh, we're so sorry to lose Dan Kennedy. And the dude came back from the dead. And he's hosting a what is it with Russell Brunson soon? Like in a week or in a month or something for some event, some GKIC event. It's wild. Wild to see. All right. All right, cool. Well, welcome y'all. So before we start, I just would love to just check in real quick. Anyone have any wins that they want to share? Anything been going on that's been exciting? John, what's up, dude?
I officially signed my first client. Yeah.
Boom.
So I've got tomorrow we have our kickoff call to get started on the half day consult. And it looks
Nice.
like it's going to move into probably a 6 month advisor role after that.
Amazing.
And then I was late for this meeting because I just got off the phone with the aesthetics company that my friend owns, and they are going to go in like a week. We're going to set up a proposal, send to them. So it looks like all of a sudden I might have two clients.
Nice, man. Sweet.
Really
Love
stoked. Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate all the support from CMOX and everybody answering all the questions to like get me to this point. I'm very, very grateful.
Yeah, man, absolutely. We're thrilled for you. So exciting. Cool. Oh, great. And how did the quarterly plan pitch go for your employer? Is that done yet?
That is happening. Tomorrow's a real busy day for me. I
Okay.
go I do the cor I do the meeting with the client that I just signed, and then immediately after have a Zoom set up with my full-time employer to do their quarterly plan. So I prepared a fairly lengthy like 80-page PowerPoint presentation for them that's kind of covers a lot of stuff. I actually
Wow.
did want to ask you. I wanted to use the ear diagram to show them. Is that
Please.
cool?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I put that in the deck. It's all animated. It's kind of cool. I'll send a copy of it to you.
Cool. Yeah, I'd love to see it, man. Love to see the art that you put into it.
It's aggressive.
Great. I have a sense that it doesn't take you a lot of time, does it, to do that kind of stuff? It's just like kind of
No,
natural for you.
not at all.
Just not
Honestly,
yours.
it takes me longer to write the words than it does to do the design. So if
Yeah.
anybody needs design stuff, I've been doing it for 25 years, like on a very high level. It's just kind of my brain just works like that. Like the whimsical stuff, like
Yeah.
logic and art put together, it's like, there's no, that's like heaven for me.
Okay, cool. Very cool, man. Congrats.
Thank you
Awesome.
all.
Yeah, man. Anyone else have anything they want to share before you dive in? Sam, what's up? Can't hear you. Sorry, can't hear you, Sam.
About now?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Now I'm trying to close out that third client that I pinged you about. I've got a negotiation call on compensation today. So,
Sweet.
yeah. Yeah, he was a bit, he gave me some pushback on the upside, but it's a bigger company. So, kind of expected that, but
Sick,
we'll
man.
see. Some sort of upside would be the main thing to figure out here.
Yeah. Awesome. Super exciting. And do you think that that's going to put you in a good place when baby two comes, that you're going to be able to kind of like, you're not going to be tied to just the labor, you're going to be tied to the outcome and you feel like you can take a little more space?
Yeah, well, this client in particular, well, Tom and I are going to tag team it for one. And then we'll have the ability to like actually have a team budget, it seems like, unlike my other two clients. So
Awesome. It's going to be nice to have. Be able to
yeah,
hire
for
people
sure.
out.
Well, I did just hire the first person for one of the clients, so I'm no longer doing all implementation. And then I just onboarded that company that Monique had recommended that outsourced to her. So far so good. I mean,
They let you hire them. I thought it was just for women.
it apparently is not anymore. So,
Cool. Monique shared, I'll just drop the link here on a boardroom call recently. She's had a lot of success with outsourced doers to get an assistant. Sweet.
yeah, so far so good from my end. They've been amazing.
Cool, man. Cool. Love to hear it. Awesome. Welcome, Amy. Hey, Laz. Alex is here. Alicia. Cool. Hey, John, Sarah. Awesome. Excited to have you all here. What's up, Becky? I haven't seen
Hey,
Becky in a
how
minute.
are you?
Hey, great. Good to have you. All right, we're just about to dive in. Cool. So, I'm just gonna kind of walk you through this, and I'll be sharing my screen here, screen a bit. What we're gonna do is just like a little bit of kind of like a training, and then we're gonna do some kind of like workshopy stuff, and we're gonna look at advertisements together on the copy side of things. So let's kick it off. Welcome to the Copywriting Masterclass. This is a fun one for me because I love copy. It's like my favorite part of marketing. I'll show you an advertisement a little later, but that got me hooked into marketing in the first place. It's the thing that we can do in marketing that grabs someone's emotional attention. And I think that's just like super magical. It feels almost like otherworldly how a couple words can just change the way someone behaves. And I'm excited to help you see through the lens of copy as a chief marketing officer. So there's like a myriad of roles and techniques that we have to be familiar with as chief marketing officers. We have to know copy, landing pages, funnels, tracking, how to lead a team, how to come up with strategy, like all these different things. But I think the most magical, in my opinion, is the art of copy. So if you've ever stood in the checkout line at the grocery store, there's magazines on the shelves. And those magazines inside those magazines could be like the most entertaining or educational or helpful content that's ever been devised. But if you don't buy the magazine, you don't consume the content. So what makes you buy the magazine? Well, some would say like it's the brand. Sure, the brand definitely matters. But why would you buy that edition right then? It's the cover. The cover matters. And who writes the copy on the cover? The title of that role is the cover copywriter. I just think it's like the perfect example of how important good copy is. Great copy grabs the reader and forces them to take action. If you're in the checkout line and you're getting a couple pages in, the inside content may propel you to buy the magazine, but it's the cover that got you initially to take action. So, yesteryear, I'm talking kind of pre-internet, there were companies like Boardroom Inc. And they hired top-tier copywriters to write multi-page mailers selling books or courses or DIY kits or whatever. They're just selling stuff. These mailers were then dispatched to tens of thousands of households in an initial test. So they would like have this copy written in a mailer. Maybe they'd staple it, put it into an envelope, and mail it to thousands, tens of thousands of homes. If the mailer was successful, that means that enough people bought that offset the cost of the mailing, it would get rolled out to the next batch to test to a bigger volume of households. Then copywriters were brought in and they were tasked with the job of improving the response rate on those mailers. So if a mailer went out and it sent to 10,000 households and it was break even, it generated customers that paid for the mailing cost. At some level, that was acceptable. It's okay to generate a customer for no profit because then you can generate them on the back end for greater profit. The copywriter, though, would come in and try to beat that mailer. They would try to write a better mailer for the company. That's known in the industry as trying to beat a control. So this is the control, the marketing piece that's going out right now that's successful, and then the copywriter comes in and tries to beat it. That idea we can take to online. We can take to all aspects of marketing. So copywriting is both an art and a science. The art of copywriting is to create something that's so interesting that the prospect consumes the first word, and then the second word, and then the third word, all the way through in rapid succession, increasing their potential to take action. That's how I see copywriting. Like, it's not to create this thing that in and of itself is beautiful or whatever. It's that one word takes you to the next word, takes you to the next word, and it just increases the potential of the reader to take action. I say reader, but I could also mean like listener or viewer. This works on video just like it does in audio, just like it does a speech from a stage. That's the art. The science of it is testing elements to find the best combinations. And those best combinations are based really on three things. One is the traffic source. People that come in from a link off of Fox News or CNN are a different type of audience than someone who's been on YouTube for the last hour watching videos, who's very different than someone who's reading emails. So we care about the traffic source people come in from. The second thing we care about is the medium that they're consuming the advertisement or the copy in. So that would be a website or an ad or an email or a physical mailer or whatever. And then the third element is what's working right now. There are some things that are working right now that weren't working before, some things that were working before that aren't working right now. It feels like we go through these cycles in marketing where like different types of offers work well. And you just kind of have to know where the market is a little bit and kind of appreciate that when you're evaluating copy. So there's this huge influx right now happening of AI-generated copy and images and videos. Like when Sora comes out, like in full steam from OpenAI, this is their video like creation software, AI-generated video stuff. It's going to be crazy. It's like revolutionary. Right now, AI images, they're good, but like, I don't know if they're causing that much disruption, but they will cause more next week and more next month and more next year, right? It's just growing. As more content's getting created, our role as the CMO is to be a critic of copy. That's it. Not to be able to write it. It's never been easier to create high quality copy with AI. Yet AI will continue to spit out low quality copy. We have to be able to identify what's good and what's garbage. That's the most important role as the CMO when it comes to copy. So I like this idea of like untold inventions, tools, ideas that could have helped millions of people have ended up in the dumpster, not because of a lack of utility, right? This invention could help real people, but they never reached the intended audience with enough persuasion. That's why they weren't successful. So think of your clients that you serve. You're serving clients that are doing something valuable. They're saving people time, saving people money, giving them a different outcome than they would otherwise get, whatever it is. If you are unable to persuade someone to take an action, it doesn't matter how good that product or service or idea is, it's never going to be utilized if there's no sale first. So copywriting helps generate the sale. So does that make sense generally right now where we're at? Kind of what copywriting is and how it works? Yeah? Okay. Hey, Michelle, nice to see you. Hey, Brendan. Baron's here. Cool. What up, Paul? Okay, cool. Great. All right. So you don't have to be a great copywriter. Like, that's the big thing I want you to take away from today. You don't have to be a great copywriter. You can be if you want. If you like copy, you want to get into it, learn it as a discipline, that's fine. Maybe you come from a pedigree in marketing where you have like come from copywriting. I feel like in some ways I did. Like, my pedigree certainly isn't as formal as Tom's in copywriting. But like, I kind of learned my way into marketing through copywriting. I was hired early on to like write ad copy. That was my first job in marketing. But I don't think I'm a great copywriter. And the good news is that you don't have to be a great copywriter. You have to just be able to spot bad copy and good copy. So we need to be able to evaluate something as being ineffective before it even gets in front of a prospect. We need to have a lens with which that we can look through that lets us grade the marketing piece before us, like when it's presented to us, and then we give it a keep or kill. We say, this is good, let's go with this, let's give this a test. Or we say, no, this is like not good. That's the litmus here. You have people on your team, they're going to be writing copy. You need to look at it and say, is this acceptable? Is this worth testing or is it not? So I'm going to give you a process on how to do that here in just a minute. So let's talk about first impressions. When I think of copy, the easiest thing to think of for me is just like a written copy, because it's just laid out. It's just easier to kind of visualize. And you have like different fonts and sizes, and it draws your attention differently, like the way copy is laid out. The most important part of any copy is the headline. They say that a headline is responsible for 50 to 75% of success in an advertisement. It's huge. Just the headline. If you took nothing away from this training, the one thing that you would take a note on is, I should probably make my team test headlines. That's it, headlines. A bad headline can ruin an otherwise great advertisement. You know, think of it, I don't know why, like kind of always think about like the dating world. If you just wore something that looked terrible, it doesn't matter how great of a person you are, people might just not even want to interact with you. Right? It's like, it's that first impression that matters the most. It's the headline. But also, it's the email subject line. That in many ways is the headline. If the email subject line doesn't get the email opened, it doesn't matter how good the email copy is. If you have a great Facebook ad, but the image is bad or the video is bad and it doesn't capture attention, you're not going to get anyone to consume the rest of the ad. YouTube videos. I don't know who here like scrolls through YouTube videos and you look at like thumbnails. Anyone here like sees some videos and you're like, oh, that does not look interesting, or that does look interesting just based on the thumbnail? Brendan, constantly, right? Yeah, it's like the thumbnail matters. Someone could put together the best content inside the video, but if you don't get the click from the thumbnail, you don't get the traffic. So headlines shouldn't be hard to understand. That's really important. They can't be something that makes someone think. They have to be like simple, like really, really clear, painfully effective. You want a headline where someone reads it and they go, oh, wow. Right? Like, and I'll show you some examples of that in a little bit. We want a headline to be simple. I recently sat with a woman who is a copy chief at a major digital publisher. And I asked her, what makes a great headline? And she said, there's two things that make for a great headline. The one is that it's so good, you're pretty pissed off. You didn't come up with it yourself. That's the first one. Like the headline, like you read it and you're like, oh, that's so good. It's like right there, been in plain sight. You didn't come up with it. And then the second one is it's been in plain sight. It's not something that's like hard to, you're not constructing something out of like weird sentence structures. You're not trying to like force something that doesn't belong. It's like, it's been there in plain sight. It's just clear and simple. That's what we're looking for in a headline. And again, we'll talk about examples in a few minutes. But that's what we want to think about. It's like, what's the first impression of copy? One hack in getting good copy written, one hack that you should have in your back pocket, absolutely. If you're working with a company that has a sales team and they've never had great marketing, or they've never had a marketing department or whatever, interview the salespeople. Ask them the number one questions that they get asked. How do they disarm those objections? The salespeople know all of the answers. They just come up with them maybe off the cuff, but they have these stories that they've probably just continue to go, come back to, that they reiterate to all their different prospects. There's a copywriter named Claude Hopkins, just a classic copywriter. He's the dude who popularized Schlitz beer. He got us to brush our teeth because of the film that's on our teeth. Just an incredible copywriter. If you don't know his work, he's worth looking into. But he defined advertising as salesmanship multiplied. Advertising is salesmanship multiplied. You can have one salesperson selling to one person, or you can multiply that salesperson through a medium like a newspaper or an email or an ad or a YouTube video and reach a lot more people. If you think of copy as salesmanship multiplied, I think it's just like a better model for simplicity for me. What I think of is like, what would happen if I just put the salesperson, sent them through Wonka Vision so they got super small, and stuck them in a Facebook ad? What would they say to the prospect? How would they get that prospect's attention? It might be one fun way to look at creating good copy. You could also have the salespeople record their sales calls. You can transcribe those sales calls. You can send them into AI and do stuff with that in order to extract, you know, pain points and objections and that kind of thing. Just having that content, having that commitment as the CMO, we need to record the salespeople, I think is really useful. And this in the marketing department will appreciate having that content available. So the next major thing that we have to do is we have to make sure that the content is easy to read. No matter what we're doing, it has to be easy to consume. This is easy on like a web page. The copy needs to be skimmable. We can say that like 10 to 20% of prospects, people who will like consume the copy or the content, 10 to 20% are long readers. They're not going to make a decision without all the facts. So we have to write to those people, otherwise we lose them, right? We want to have depth in our copy. We also need to make the copy easy to skim. Headlines, subheads, headings, bullet points, italicized, underline, bolding, font changes, callouts. Dan Kennedy is like the expert in taking a red crayon, it seems, and just like circling stuff on his mailers. That's what you want to be able to do in a way that looks good and is on brand for your client, that allows the consumer, when they read it, just to like skim and get the whole picture without having to do all the detailed reading. If they choose to go back and do detailed reading, that's fine too, and you have supporting content inside there. But being able to skim is really important. Next major component here is that you always have to be testing. If you're not testing, your campaigns will never break records. So I think you should have a new mantra in the marketing department when it comes to copy, which is always be testing. So instead of massaging copy endlessly to find something that feels perfect, right? Something that the department is like, yeah, this is it. This is what we want. Like, this is it. It's better just to keep the momentum up by taking good angles and good ideas and then testing them with check writers. We need to ask people who are buyers what they think. If you ask your spouse or your friend or a marketing colleague or someone that works at the company what they think of copy, they're going to have an opinion, but their opinion doesn't matter. Right? Like maybe a copywriter's opinion matters, but besides that, no one's opinion matters. When I ask my wife, what do you think about this copy? She doesn't give me an opinion that matters because she's not the ideal buyer. And I don't want someone's opinion, I want someone's action. So we can't ask people what they think or how they feel about the copy. We have to just take stuff that we believe is good enough to test and test it. We have to get it in front of the buyer. The only person whose opinion matters is the potential buyer. And I don't want just their opinion. I want their action. I want to measure it. I don't know where I heard this idea, but someone once said that marketing by racehorse. And I don't know, maybe camels have like some utility that I don't really appreciate, but that like feels really real to me. I've seen a lot of camel marketing, and I think we all want thoroughbred racehorse, strong, powerful marketing.
Hey, so you broke up there. Can you say the thing about racehorse again? Can you like back up to before that?
So marketing by committee makes a camel, not a racehorse. It's just weird, right? Like I said, maybe a camel makes biological sense. But it's not fast and efficient the same way a thoroughbred racehorse is. We want to create the greatest advertisement. And the only way that we can do that is through testing, not through committee, not through a bunch of people sharing their opinion and then us saying, okay, we'll take your idea in and we'll take your idea. It's like, no, all these ideas that we evaluate as valid are going to get tested and the market will tell us what the right answer is. That's all I care about. Does that make sense, Ben? Cool. All right. Next big kind of component here, kind of the last one before we dive into how to evaluate good copy. So I want you to create your own swipe file. Does anyone here own a swipe file? Have you ever put together a swipe file of marketing? John has, sweet. Tom, no way. Great. Denise has, cool. Yeah, awesome. Michelle, Baron, cool. So a swipe file. Start building a collection of great marketing materials in your niche and elsewhere. Save the emails in a folder. Grab the physical mail and keep it in a shoebox. Invest in swipe files. Let me show you one. I bought this. This is crazy. This is, Todd Brown came out with these. I have, there's four of these that are this thick. It's 22 pounds of swipe files. It's amazing. Like this is amazing new testosterone lifter. Shoots up your sexual performance, strengthens your heart, increases your energy, helps you lose weight, and relieves your prostate problems. It's from Men's Health. I don't even know, or Men's Natural Health some time ago. Awesome to have this stuff. Not because I'm writing for that audience, but because there's interesting ideas in this. You're stuck on something. You're like, what's an angle we could take? If you open up your swipe file and find a good angle that's in a completely different niche and apply it to your client, it can be really exciting. You can offer swipes when you see them, bring them back to your team. Some of the best entrepreneurs I've worked for as fractional CMO, they'll see what the competitors are doing and they'll email it to me and be like, why aren't we doing this? That's a swipe in a lot of ways. It's like, oh, that's a good one. Like, I didn't think of writing an email that way. Cool. We're going to take it in. We could copy it, but give me a week. We're going to reinvent it to make it even better and make it all our own. Swipe files is not a, you're not allowed to like just steal other people's work and call it your own. Like, that's not what we're doing with swipe files. They're to give us ideas. I'm working on writing some stuff kind of this season, and I get stuck on how do you open a paragraph? Like, a great writer knows how to open a paragraph. Like, they can just open a paragraph, whatever, 1,000 different ways. I can't. So I just go grab a book and I open it up and I read a paragraph. And what is the opening line? How does it start? It's like, oh, there we go. That jogged it for me. I take the kind of the premise for that open and I can write the whole paragraph. But forced to come up with it on my own, it's really difficult. So having a swipe file, kind of surrounding yourself with other people's written material, I think is really helpful. I'm going to show you some digital swipe file stuff too in a little bit. I recently got an email from a guy I used to work with who got pitched to by a marketer. I'm just going to read a couple lines of what he said. I love this. This was his approach. He says, I've roughed out a bunch of very unusual and different approaches to attracting and accessing your ideal customer online. They're based on coming at the challenge from an entirely different slant than you currently use. I can't promise it'll be effective. I also need to explain what would follow that kind of headline to support the offer and move the prospective ideal customer into viable profitability. But I think these would be fun for you to consider. At the very least, let me explain the psychology behind using an alternative strategy approach. Kind of a weird email, right? For a guy to pitch. Just his line. I have roughed out a bunch of very unusual and different approaches. Unusual and different. I love that. Like, I read that and it just like, it hit me. I was like, there's gold there. I saved that in my swipe file. I referenced it twice before today's training. So this is the third time I've referenced it. We just grab these little bits and we're like, ooh, that's really interesting. Ooh, that's really interesting. You can pull them from other sources, not even around marketing. I was just looking up Aristotle's Four Causes. I don't know if you guys know about this. Like, Aristotle came up with his Four Causes, which is like, what is something made of? How is it arranged? What or who made it? And what is the purpose of it? That tells you something's essence, like a table's essence or a spoon's essence. That idea, how do you apply that to copywriting, right? How do you apply that to these different fields of study or the things that you're working on? I find that to be really exciting. So my swipe files aren't dedicated just to like examples of past mailers. They also include weird stuff, esoteric stuff, things that I read in books, things that I see on signs. You want to have that stuff kind of around you that you can just kind of pull from. I find a swipe file to be the place that I go to when I'm feeling uninspired and I need to like figure something out. I sit down with the swipe file, just kind of surround myself with all the stuff, just page through until something hits me. You having a swipe file means that you could pass an idea over to your team. All right. So I want to break down the five elements of a great piece of copy. But before I do that, I want to hear if you all have any questions for clarity. Anything not clear? Cool. Where can you get that 22-pound swipe file? Todd Brown sells it.
It was like a limited run.
He called it like a limited run, but he had run it before, so you know it's not like he can't just print more materials off. It was expensive though. It was crazy expensive. It's $1,200 for just a 22 pounds of paper. But you know, if that helps your client, it could be really useful. You could also, I'm going to show you how, a digital swipe file here in a little bit that could be helpful for you. Awesome. Great. Okay, cool. So let's talk about the five elements of a great piece of copy. So obviously you got to learn the rules and then you can break them. You don't have to follow these rules. You don't have to have all five elements in copy, but you need to know that that's what you want. So I'm going to share my screen and I'll walk you through them. And then we're going to go through examples. And you guys will get a doc with all this stuff in it. So the first element is the identification of an actual problem the prospect is facing or will face. That's big. If there's not a problem, why does someone need a solution? The first thing you have to have is a problem. Ben, I think in HVAC, people have problems. There's two kinds of problems. The problem that they have or the problem that they will have, right? The problem that you have is that the AC's off and it's going to be a record high this week. Problem that you will have is that you haven't been serviced in 12 months or your unit's more than 10 years old or whatever. Right? Those are clear problems. We have to have a clear and meaningful promise to alleviate the prospect of that problem. It's like problem solution. Like, that's helpful. We want to have a clear and easy call to action. Easy here is really important. We want to make it as easy as possible. You want the prospect to have to do as least work as possible. I was going to hire a guy yesterday and he was like, yeah, let's meet for an hour on Zoom. I was like, no, like you can ask me questions on Upwork in the chat and I'll reply, but I will not meet with you for an hour. He's going to lose the job, not because he's not qualified, but because his call to action was terrible. I think I'm asking him to do like 2 hours worth of work and he wants to meet with me for an hour. Seems silly. Overwhelming proof. It's a great thing to have. When you have proof, people believe it. Hopefully, right? That's the idea. The more proof, the better. And then finally, a perceived or an actual reduction in risk on the part of the buyer. Examples of reducing risk are guarantees, trials, that kind of thing. One way that you reduce risk is that you offer a 24/7 call center that takes their calls if they have any problems. We can reduce risk without having to guarantee it. We can reduce risk without having to give a discount or anything. But these things are all important. People are kind of looking for these things. You know, someone has to have a problem, know that a solution exists, know about your solution, and then take action with your solution. One reason they may not do it is because of a risk. And they, if that risk was removed, they may take action. So not all mediums, like marketing mediums, have the space to comprehensively cover all five elements. So we have to do the best we can with the constraints we have. And I want you just to be able to give copy that gets on your desk for final review a pass or fail grade. So I pulled together some questions that you could ask. First one is, what outcome do you want to happen? Like from this marketing piece, from this copy, what do you want to happen? Is the outcome valuable to the business? Sometimes we do things like we write copy, we have the team write copy for things that just don't matter. So if you ask if it's valuable, that's the first thing that's going to say like, yes or no, we should like throw this whole campaign away. It's a waste of time. Is the call to action as simple as possible? You know, the old call to actions of like, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to this address. That was a pain for people. They had to like get an envelope, write it, put a stamp on it, stick that in another envelope with the request, write it. Like, it's a lot of work. How do we make it as simple as possible? Is it probable that the copy will reach enough people to generate a benefit that outweighs the time and cost of getting the message in front of them? Said another way, like, is it even worth it? It's a valuable outcome, good, simple call to action. But if we launch it, are we even going to be able to reach enough people to justify the cost here? Then how will you measure the outcome? How long will it take you to know if the copy is successful? Measuring the outcome for so many companies, like before we step in, they're just doing marketing and they're getting a result from quote unquote marketing, but they don't know where the marketing came from. You know, excuse me, they don't know where the lead came from or why the person converted. Tracking really matters. And this is part of your like decision journal. Like if you're going to take action and do this, how long will you need before you'll be able to measure the success of the campaign? What is the promise being made? And then does the copy make good on the promise? I see this happen in, has anyone ever seen like a movie trailer? And you see the trailer and you're like, whoa, this movie looks amazing. And it's like all these scenes and you're like, oh, that seems like a really great scene. And you watch the movie and one scene was never in the movie. Anyone ever like experienced that? It's like they like cut the scene out of the movie. They didn't make good on it. They made a promise to me. I paid the money. I did the thing. And they didn't make good on it. Leaves you frustrated. Happened half-baked. I guess if any movie would do it, that one would just make sense. Yeah, that's frustrating, right? You have to make good on the promise. Next is, does the prospect have a burning problem? Gary Halbert, great copywriter. We'll look at one of his mailers here in a minute. He says that the greatest advantage that he wants is not to have the lowest priced product or the most effective product or to be the most well-known, have the best brand. He doesn't want any of that stuff. The one advantage Gary always said that he wanted was a starving crowd. That's what we want. We want to find a starving crowd. Does a prospect have a burning problem? Are they in a starving crowd? If so, they're more likely to take action. And they'll take action on an imperfect offer more than a lower kind of temperature prospect would take action on a perfect offer. We want someone who has a burning problem. Is there overwhelming proof? It's a question you might ask. Gary Bensavenga says that he doubles proof to improve response rate on the magalogs that he'd send out, which are like advertising catalogs in a magazine format. Double proof, just like when you can, where you can, double the proof. Is there an image or a headline that captures attention quickly? And what's the least amount of traffic we can test this copy with? Minimum testing is like so critical. You could come up with a great campaign. Everyone likes it. It gets launched and you launch it to the whole audience and it bombs. That could be really painful for you as the CMO. The flip of that is to just to test the 10% of the audience or 5% of the audience. Test a small subset. And if it's successful, roll it out. Just imagine the old mailers that these companies like Bottomline would send out. If they sent it out to a bunch of households, like beyond an initial test, and they just said, let's just try it to 100,000 households, and it was a failure, it would be a crippling disaster. So they always did it to a few thousand households for an initial test, and then they rolled it out from there. I've got a friend that works at one of these old school kind of direct response advertising publishers, and they still do the exact same thing. They test to a very small group with a new offer, and then they roll it out very slowly to like the main list. All right, so John, what's up?
When you're doing those tests with you know, different people, if you're sending out to say 10% of your audience, how do you refine, like you know what I mean? Do you just do like A through C is your first one, like alphabetical, or like what do you try and do, like, you know, because I would think different areas like geographically might actually have a different response, not based on the copy, but based on other factors. How do you eliminate the other variables?
Yeah. So it's a great question. One of the best resources on it is a Gary Halbert letter. It would take me a minute to find the exact one, but the basic idea is you just need a random sampling of your audience. That's what you do. You just pull a random sampling out. And if you can, mail it on a same day of the week as you're going to mail your main offer. So you're taking things like time and day of the week out of the equation, though, you know, there's always holidays and weird things that happen.
Is there a tool you know of, like with your CRM, that would pull a random sample like that? Or do you just pull a bunch of random people into like another list? Like what's the process to be able to generate the list that you want to do a test with?
So if you're doing an email list, I don't know of anything off the shelf that provides that functionality to say like just mail a random sample of this data. You might have to just like pull it out, randomize it, grab a subset of it, re-upload it with a new tag, you know, that's like called like your test tag or something. But for website traffic, you could easily do it with a tool like Visual Website Optimizer, VWO. You could set up a variation. VWO, I think their free plan even will let you do that. VWO.com. They're one of those annoying companies that you have to like, oh no, yeah. They're good. They changed their strategy here. So here it is. So how many unique visitors free on the free plan? You can do A-B testing. So you could do an A-B test and just do like 90% to A, 10% to B of web traffic.
Oh, does wow. That make sense? Yeah, that's cool. Okay, so that's, and it just like what, randomly sends them to like the different page with copy or something?
Yeah, the technology of it is you put a like a control code at the top of the page, of the main page, and then that control code says every 10th person that comes to the page, actually just send them to this page instead. Just do a quick redirect.
Oh, wow. Cool. That's really neat. Okay, yeah. Cool. Thanks.
Yeah. There's also ways to do it with like multivariate testing. Multivariate is when you test like individual elements, like headline, button color, pricing, location, that kind of stuff.
We're not there yet.
Okay. Yeah. Multivariate, I think, is the most exciting idea for us because we can test all the permutations. It's just that it takes so long. You know, you're running three tests simultaneously. It's better to run one test and then another test, like one test to completion. I would anticipate for most of us with our clients' traffic, it's going to take you at least 2 weeks to get an answer once a test is launched. For some of us, it might take 6 weeks or 12 weeks. It's all about the how much of a winner the winner is and how much traffic you have. So the percentage difference, if it's very close, it'll take a long time to find statistical significance. Are you good on that, John? Yeah, cool. All right, great. All right, so I want to show you some marketing examples. We'll just do this one first because this is the one that got me into marketing. I just adore this ad. It's like my favorite ad of all time. Does anyone know this one? Back of Boys Life magazine. Yeah, John, you were reading that too?
No, I was an Eagle Scout.
Hell yeah, man. Same. All right. So back of Boys Life magazine, it had like stories about camping and whatever, and I was never into it. Like, I love camping, but like I wasn't into like reading about it. What I was into was like the ads in the back. And there was this little ad. Come on. Like, this is so interesting. Free, lifts 200 pounds, float on air. Like, yes. Like, every part of me as a kid wanted this. Just a great ad, I thought. And it ran inside of Boys Life forever, for as long as I received it. Now, it's like, it's weird that it's kind of, if you read it a little bit of a bait and switch. The free thing is actually this astronaut iron-on with order, which is, okay, that's what's free. Lifts 200 pounds. And then down here it says float on air around your house or school. Easy to build, lowest cost, man-size air car in the world. What? Powered by an ordinary vacuum cleaner motor. A great father and son project. Exciting, fun, low cost, easy. Fantastic school science project. Amazing. It really works. It's like before they had emojis. They just like wrote words like that. Send $3 for plans and photos to... what is that? Wiltworks, P.O. Box, yada, yada, yada. So nice and just like direct. I like this a lot. So if we come back and grade it, we say the identification of an actual problem. I have no problem. This does not solve a problem. Maybe the only problem that they identify is a father-son activity. My dad's looking for things to do with me. You right? That could be
boredom.
Boredom? Sure.
Boredom.
Yeah. Next is a clear and meaningful promise to alleviate them of that problem. Yeah, feels like very direct. I can float on friggin' air. You know, like that's a clear promise. An easy call to action. Given the time that it was live, yeah, I think this is kind of as easy as it comes. You know, I could have also like called in, but sending $3 in the mail is pretty simple. Overwhelming proof? No, they have no proof in here. Perceived or actual reduction in risk. The only perceived reduction in risk is the cost. $3. And I kind of can't remember back to the early 90s if $3 was a lot or not. I don't think it was too much, though. So maybe that was their reduction in risk. Still a wildly successful ad. All right, I got this next one here. Let's do Coat of Arms. So quick website here, swiped.co. Great website. If you don't have a swipe file, use this one. They don't have a ton of content, but they've got some great stuff in here, especially some classics. And if you're doing travel, you're in the travel niche. Here are six advertisements that they have swiped and they show you. A control versus a classic. Obviously, classics are old. Here's this coat of arms letter. Check this out. This is like one of the most successful marketing campaigns of all times. Let me tell you, it mailed to 600 million people. 600 million people received a piece of mail with a stamp on it, trifolded this letter. Imagine how successful this has to be to go to 600 million people. Also, imagine the labor of cashing the checks of the people who send money back. So this is Gary Halbert wrote this. It's so good. Dear Mr. McDonald, did you know that your family name was recorded with a coat of arms in ancient heraldic archives more than 7 centuries ago? My husband and I discovered this while doing some research for some of our friends of ours who have the same last name as you do. We've had an artist recreate the coat of arms exactly as described in the ancient recordings or records. This drawing, along with other information about the name, has been printed up into an attractive one-page report. The bottom half of the report tells the story of the very old and distinguished family name of McDonald. I love that line. The very old and distinguished family name. It tells what the name means, its origin, the original family motto, its place in history, and about famous people who share it. The top half has a large, beautiful reproduction of an artist's drawing of the earliest known coat of arms for the name of MacDonald. This entire report is documented, authentic, and printed on parchment-like paper suitable for framing. The report so delighted our friends that we have had a few extra copies made in order to share this information with other people of the same name. 600 million friends, right? Framed, these reports make distinctive wall decorations, and they are great gifts for relatives. It should be remembered that we have not traced anyone's individual family tree, but have researched back through several centuries to find out about the earliest people named MacDonald. All we are asking for them is enough to cover the added expense of having the extra copies printed and mailed. If you are interested, just please let us know right away, as our supply is pretty slim. Just verify that we have your correct name and address and send the correct amount of cash or check for the number of reports you want. We'll send them promptly by return mail. $2 they want, $2. If you are only ordering one, send $2. Additional reports ordered at the same time and sent to the same address are $1 each. Amazing. Amazing letter. I just love everything about it. So we can come back and just peek at the rubric here. The identification of an actual problem. Not really. They're not facing a pressing problem, but it is interesting. I think we would classify that as just like people want to feel important, and this is a way for them to feel important. So that might be a problem. A clear and meaningful process, promise. Absolutely. We're going to mail you this thing. It's suitable for framing. It's attractive. Clear and easy call to action. Yeah. Overwhelming proof. I think the letter in and of itself is proof. They could write something below it from another MacDonald that said something that was like, this is a great report. My family loves it. You know, people talk about it anytime they come over, whatever. But I would assume there was actually no space for that. And he probably tested it and it didn't help. And then a perceived or actual reduction in risk. I think the way that it's written shows that risk is pretty low. I mean, $2 for this seems pretty reasonable. Awesome letter. Anyone have a takeaway from this that you think is like interesting? Something that you want to share? I'm not seeing the chat.
They don't even have like what the product is. There's a description for what to expect, which to me just blows my mind. Like, pay me $2 for something you don't even know. I can send you like a one page, you know, paragraph, and you just pay $2 for it.
Yeah, it is interesting. I bet there's a lot of lonely people that receive it though. And they were like, wait, I could be like, I always knew that I was related to someone really famous, but I don't know who it was. Like, can you tell me? The consumer intelligence has changed dramatically. Yeah. What do you mean, Brendan?
So like we look at that and kind of laugh, kind of giggle. But like, if I tried to send that letter out now, it would not nearly have the same results as it did in the early 90s. So sure. People who receive that letter are just like, oh my God, this is spam. They're trying to get something from me. Versus back then, it's like, oh, sweet. I get my family crest. Dope.
Yeah, right. Totally. Absolutely agree. I think that that goes back to this idea that we have to know what's working right now.
Yeah.
Right. And that's one of the reasons that people hire us, like marketing strategy and leadership. But the strategy part is not just how to do marketing strategy. It's what's working today in marketing strategy. Though I wager a bet that a lot of the stuff that used to work is cyclical and it will come back and work again. You know, there's something that people are doing where they want to have this kind of like connection to their family. You know, will like family crest signet rings become a thing again? Yeah, probably, you know, at some point. All right, I've got some other stuff to share with you here that I think would be helpful. I love this box. I saw it years ago at Costco. Sarah Vidal. This is copy on a product. It's just so good, I think. America's number one anti-aging therapy. Awesome. Who says that? They said it, you know? There's no proof element there, but they just said it, which... oftentimes, just stating something is enough. Reverse the signs of aging. Clear. Clinically tested to increase the critical peptide associated with reduced fine lines and wrinkles, increased energy, deeper, more restorative sleep, and immune system support. clinically validated, backed by 15 patents. And then the number 15 in a circle. Like, I don't know. That's, it seems weird to have the number 15. Like, who would think, let's put the number 15 in a circle? But that's like a little bit of proof that they're sliding in. I think that's cool. This has been a huge seller on store shelves for years. So an example of that is I've seen it at GNC and I've seen it still at Costco. It's great. They have a line that they use, like Secretagogue. It's a big one that they use in their marketing. It's an interesting word that kind of gets people interested in the offer. I found this great proactive acne gloop commercial from 2016. Probably gonna get hit with an ad. Sorry about that. So here's the ad. Let's just do a little audio on it. And here we go.
Being a teenager isn't easy, and parenting one isn't either. But if you have a teenager who struggles with acne, that's one thing you can control.
Parents who go the extra mile for their kids know that Proactiv goes the extra mile for their skin. Because Proactiv doesn't just clear skin, it helps keep it clear. And with the new...
All right, Proactiv, serious marketing team behind that. Dan Kennedy actually was a marketing consultant for them for years. And I just pulled the transcript of it. Just those lines. Being a teenager isn't easy, and parenting one isn't easy either. What a headline, right? A lot of parents are like, yeah. But if you have a teenager who struggles with acne, it's one thing you can control. What an interesting promise right above the fold, like immediate. I can control my kid's acne. You have my attention. Parents who go the extra mile for their kids know that Proactiv goes the extra mile for their skin, because Proactiv doesn't just clear skin, it helps keep it clear. Amazing. And then a bunch of reason why. And then the offer. But I just think that that's an incredible opening. If I was going to create a commercial for a product, I would start with this as a swipe and rewrite this to sell anything else. Be among the first 800 to order and get a luxurious green tea moisturizer free for a gorgeous glow. 800 to order in and of itself is a piece of social proof. You know, it like creates urgency, but it's social proof. There's going to be 800 other orders that are happening soon. They tell you it's a great deal. You should go out and try it because Proactiv works. Call this number or use the promo code SCHOOL at Proactiv. So when I ask the question, how do you measure success? How will the outcome be measured? For Proactiv, they're measuring it by the coupon code SCHOOL. They know that the advertisement was successful for them. All right, a couple more. Check out what Apple's been doing with the iPhone. iPhone 11. Look at the subject line. iPhone 11 Pro and 11 are here. Headline, like, what's in it for me? Super low cost, $25 to get a new phone. Amazing. Buy. So clear. iPhone 13, a couple years later. iPhone 13 and 13 Pro are here. Buy. $41 a month. Get ready for the iPhone 14 pre-order now. I didn't have the one that says that it was here. Get ready now. Like, clear, above the fold, direct. Your step-by-step guide to getting ready for pre-order. If people want the phone, this, it's like, it's just so clear. Like, it's the right headline because it's the headline that is exactly what I want. Your step-by-step guide to getting ready for pre-order. It's just beautiful. If you're launching a product for a client, you would do well to look in your old emails to see other products getting launched, especially ones that have, you know, $1 trillion market cap. They probably do something right. All right. Couple other places to peek for good copy. Facebook ads library. Anyone here know about the Facebook ad library? Yeah. Yeah. You all use it. Good. If you don't use it, check the link I just dropped. I just looked up High Smile or His Smile. it's a toothpaste company. Like, their toothpaste is great. My kids love it. Look at this iced latte, vanilla iced mocha, Right now in our family, banana toothpaste is like top. It's right up there with cotton candy for the kids. And you can just like watch all their ads and see what, you know, what they're running. It gives you an idea too when they were launched. March 18, which was yesterday. We scroll all the way down. Chupa Chup flavor. Wow, it's a throwback. Lots of ads. March 11th. They're driving a ton of ads. Is it show a number? 3,200 ads they're running. These people are running some serious tests. So we can see what ads have been running the longest. We can get an idea of the copy of them. We can watch them. You can get them transcribed. Super helpful to see all of the ads that someone's running. The belief should be that if an ad has been running consistently for some time, it's probably pretty effective. Or if you continue to see it keep coming up, like it gets relaunched at a certain interval, it's probably effective. Another one to look at, VidTau. Anyone here use VidTau? No? Sick website. This is just a free version. I haven't even like unlocked the free trial. And I just search in it for Hi Smile, and it's going to show me these are the ads that they're running. So, VidTau is the active swipe for video ads on YouTube. If you want to know what ads a company's running on YouTube, you can look here. Or you can look for, instead of looking for a brand, you can look for a topic like toothpaste.
Show off bright white teeth when they smile.
But how does the science stack up? Sunrise,
like such a great...
Yeah, thanks, great guys. Can you believe there's even a purple shampoo for your teeth now? It's just
fascinating, right? Pulling these down, taking a peek at them is like the copy, how they're started, that kind of stuff can be really useful. There's some more information down here on like total ad spend. I'll show you like a little dirty trick. If we just inspect this little part right here. And oh, I did this yesterday. Huh, can't do it, it seems. You're able to see total ad spend and things like that. If we hover these figures, we see that it says filter blur. And if we remove the 4 pixels, we see the value below it. I'm sure if you just had an account, you could see this stuff as well. But just interesting to see here. This ad had $102,000 in ad spend is what VidTau is assuming that they've spent. Very interesting to be able to see that information. Do without, you know, what you want. The belief should be that if someone's run an ad and spent a lot of money on it consistently, probably makes sense. That it's useful.
How did you get to that again? I'm sorry.
Good question. It's kind of tricky. So I'm in Chrome. I right click and I go to inspect.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
And then from inspect in the top here, I have this little picker, the chooser. And then I just choose a field. I'm just hovering. And as I choose it, this is the field, total ad spend. I mean, it's $64,000, but it's blurred. So I just remove the blur. I can just remove all that.
And it would show it.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
When you see like password fields and it just has asterisks, you can do the same thing. It says field type password, change that to field type text, and it decodes the password. I can show you that maybe later if that doesn't make sense. But like VidTau, if your team is creating video ads, absolutely get on here, spend the money. They have like a live swipe. You can understand, like you can save all the swipes in a place, review them later. VidTau is just like the king of having all this content in one place. Really, really, really valuable. Stefan Georgi has this. He put this free ad copy together. It's a cool little like GPT that helps you write ads. That's cool. They ask you some specific questions, like look at that. Who's your target market? What problem are you looking to solve? What are alternative ways that people solve the problem, et cetera? And then it just generates ad copy for you. That's cool. Like, you don't have to be able to write ad copy. You can just like knock it out this way. You just have to be able to review that ad copy and be like, is that good enough or not? Is that worth testing or not? And that's powered by GPT-4. Jasper also has copywriting with AI. So that's all listed here. You know, if you want to do that, you can test Jasper with your team. It's pretty cheap, $60 a month. And they can create a bunch of copy, but you'll need them to be able to kind of analyze that copy to make sure it's good enough to even test. ChatGPT can do it. This is Sean GPT, this friend of mine, Sean Vosler. He put together a little GPT and I asked it, help me write ads for High Smile toothpaste for parents. And that's all I wrote. And it gave me a bunch of ads. Now I could definitely give it more information. I could query what information you need for me to write a better ad, et cetera. And it could write them. But that's a free way effectively to do it. And that's listed at the bottom of the doc here. Upwork. Wanted to show you this. I went on Upwork, which is a talent sourcing platform, chatting with some friends actually about it yesterday. And we're all just so impressed with the quality of talent that's on Upwork these days. A couple years ago, it was garbage. It was just like, just low quality admin work. And now it's kind of anything you want. I just searched for YouTube thumbnail on Upwork. Because as like, you know, this is still copy, right? The YouTube thumbnail. And on the left-hand side, I said, I just want freelancers. And I want their job success. I want them to have been rated well. And I want them to have earned $1,000 at least. That's it. They don't need any level of English. I don't care. Just make me something great. And I just search for those people. And we see this guy in Pakistan or, I mean, those are all Pakistan, Montenegro, Romania, right? We can hire someone like this to build high quality images. Sam Bankman, it's amazing. So you can identify what you want the content to be about or what the copy is, and then you get someone to generate that into an image for you. And these people are relatively inexpensive. You know, it might take them 5 hours to create something. That would be ideal for you. I don't know. You know, you can ask them timeline. Yeah, and I have one more link for you here. We're talking about, well, a couple more. Next one is, this is like a nice video playlist. I don't know this guy, but he's gone through 100 different sales letters. Sales letters are like long form copy, and he's broken them down. 25 minutes on average or so. Just like one of those things that you could just like turn on and just kind of zone out to if you want to just have like some good marketing copy just fed into your brain. So consider that. Paris is in here. Paris wrote the foreword to my book, The Fractional CMO Method. Paris is a hell of a copywriter. Gary Halbert, Gary Bensavanga, some of my favorites. So this might be something interesting for you if you want to learn a little bit more about copy and just be around better copy. And then two other links here. So the Gary Halbert letter, this is kind of the classic letter that Gary Halbert mailed. People paid, I don't even know, maybe Tom, you know how much people paid for this, but you know, how to write killer headlines. He mailed this out at some point. I don't even know the years on it, but this is the letter that his kids repurposed online. So you can read it and just kind of get his view on how to write a great headline. He follows the AIDA approach, which is very common in marketing, which is great. Get their attention, interest, desire, action. That's a fine formula for writing headlines. There's others, but certainly is as good as any. So you can read copy there if you're interested. Also, you can send these resources to people on your team. Hey, you want to be the copywriter, please read the stuff. And then the last one is Gary Bensavanga's Marketing Bullets. Similarly, 29 kind of free trainings. On what he's done. And Gary, I think he's my favorite. I just like the way he writes. Worth kind of checking these out if you're interested on the copywriting side of things. All right, so that's a lot about copy. Who has any questions about that? or who wants to like review copy for your client? Anything you want to dive into? Oh, Sam, I see your question here. GPT-4 versus Jasper or WriteSonic? I think I have an unfair advantage that I know what I want and I can like ask for it really directly. So I can write it. I can write an ad and say, can you rewrite this in the tone of Gary Halbert? Rewrite this like Dan Kennedy would write it and get some ideas from it and put something together that I like. And I pay for ChatGPT-4. Absolutely. I think that's to me, that's like an easy, probably long-term expense, $21.50 a month or something. But I know other people like Jasper. So I'm sure Jasper is probably would get me further faster. I just tend to use ChatGPT-4. Are you using either of those?
I was using WriteSonic for blog posts, but I mean, they're all using GPT-4's API. So why spend on like five or six tools when you can just use ChatGPT for $20?
Especially with these new GPTs, the custom GPTs inside of ChatGPT.
Yeah. I mean, the combination of that and Sora, like you're done.
Yeah. Yeah, Ben, you're liking Claude. I'm seeing a lot of good stuff with Claude. I actually have no Claude experience outside of just using Poe for it. What do you like about Claude?
The newest release. So I tried Claude quite a while ago and I didn't find it better than ChatGPT, but the newest release, it seemed to do a much better job of understanding what you're trying to accomplish. And it remembers what you've told it a lot better. So like I've talked about my client, what's going on there, actually discussed some issues I was having and looking for, hey, give me some general advice on how to deal with this situation. And then I started asking it to write copy for me and it remembered everything I had said, days and 50 messages ago, and it started incorporating them in to the copy. And it was like, oh, wow, that's much easier. It's much better. So it just works the way I expected ChatGPT to work for me. And just ChatGPT gets me like 70% of the way there, and Claude gets me 85% of the way there.
Wow. I'm seeing Claude has a 200,000 context window. I don't know what ChatGPT's is. Do you know?
It changes a lot. I don't know the most recent. But it was, I don't know if it's better than that, but.
Yeah, 32,000 maybe.
And this just came out like a week ago and I've already like kind of switched. Like I haven't booted up ChatGPT in a while, so.
Wow. I like on ChatGPT, I use the, like the audio thing, like you can talk to it and it gives you an answer. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool. You get some really nice answers from it.
Also, the ChatGPT on your phone is like the best dictation tool. It picks up all of your, the way that you actually talk. If you just want to have it transcribe something, it gets all your natural speech pattern, as where when you do like, Siri or something like that, it's usually mumbo jumbo at the end.
Mm-hmm. I have to say period, comma, Siri for sure.
I found some web results. I can show them if you ask again.
Thanks for triggering my Siri, guys. I appreciate that.
Hey, John, I have a quick question. You said something about ChatGPT with tone. Do you mean tone like as in, so you don't have to say period and question mark, or do you mean tone by like how it writes your copy?
Yeah, no, like exactly how you speak. You don't have to say the periods and commas. And if you take a pause and say, and then like go back and say like, or any of those things, it catches all of that, like as you actually say it. Like, obviously we all kind of put some extra pauses and weird things in there that it does catch. But like, as opposed to Siri, like in my experience, once Siri, if you're doing like a voice to text memo, it might get a sentence or two right. But once it gets off the rails, it just becomes garbage.
I didn't know if you meant that tone or like tone of copy. So I wasn't sure. So I gotcha.
Awesome. Great. Anyone have any questions about copy generally, like how to evaluate copy for your clients? Anyone have any projects coming up with copy on it, like web pages? Ben?
Yeah, so I just started a project for my new crypto client. That is, It's kind of, he wants a series of drip emails for people who've already signed up, but haven't like funded their account. And it's, you know, he wants a long series because it's apparently that's like the really the sticking point.
Yeah.
So, I'm just wondering what the right way is to approach, you know, I'm not trying to sell them. So, well, I mean, I guess I kind of am trying to sell them on funding their account, but they're already kind of a known entity. They're kind of a customer already. What do you say after the fifth or sixth email? Hey, please come fund your account. I mean, like,
so the, you want to give something value add. The first thing that comes to mind for me is product updates and then like live onboarding calls. If they want to book a slot for an onboarding to get everything set up, text chat that's available, like group onboarding, like, hey, come in, I've got someone here. You'll be put in a waiting room until it's your turn. And then we'll walk you through setting everything up. Could be helpful for like the non-technical people. Like hold their hand through it. You can't really do like social proof of like who else has done it. But like any press releases, you send them all like proof elements that way. You just can't be like, hey, John put a bunch of money in and doubled his money on Sol, you know, Sol or whatever. That's not gonna, it's probably not gonna be good.
Yeah. So the issue is I don't know that the onboarding, like having somebody walk you through it, because the part where we're getting stuck is where they have to actually put in their social security number and very personal kind of information. And I can't imagine somebody would want to be in a, I don't know, maybe we could set it up where you're not actually viewing their screen, but just kind of demonstrating and they do it on their own screen or something. So maybe, let me think about it.
I worked with a company very similar to this. It was a long application process for getting a merchant account. And it's a pain in the ass. Like everyone wants the merchant account and they start it and then it's a 5-step form. And we had different email campaigns that came out for everyone. But at some point, after 7 days, we assumed that they were not going to fund their account, you know, finish their application. So we just pushed them back to just good marketing material all about the business.
Okay, that's a good idea.
Yeah, like lost them at some point.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah.
You lost them completing the account. You have to now go back and resell them on the whole process. It's not, you're almost there. It's, you're probably frustrated to come back and now, you know, do the kind of rethink through the whole process, like resell them.
Do you think it would be helpful to set a deadline? Like, hey, you've got to do this within 7 days.
Or... I mean, you could prune their account.
That's what I was thinking is like, just, yeah, we're going to delete your account if you don't finish this process. There's some legal ramifications to actually, like, we can't do business with people who haven't finished this process.
Right. Yeah. So you have to get rid of it. Sure. Do you have like any kind of wait list to join?
No wait list.
I wonder if having a wait list, even if it's accelerated when they get accepted in, could be useful to create more urgency.
Yeah. Actually, that's a cool idea.
Like who's doing that? Is it Mastodon or Blue Sky? One of those. Mastodon. All right, that's Mastodon. Join Mastodon. I don't really know these platforms that well, so excuse me, but they have servers. No, you can join that right away. So it's not Mastodon. Is it Blue Sky?
Is that something else I can help with?
A new account. Looks like I can get right in on Blue Sky. Who's doing it? Anyone know? Superhuman?
No, I signed up for it a month ago and it was just, yeah, you just go right in.
You got right in.
You use Superhuman, Casey?
I tried it and it just didn't work for me. Not for my workflow. This guy is doing some build in public thing. I don't know. Yeah, I would just like look for anyone who's doing any kind of like doors aren't open yet thing, kind of like pre-sell. And then accelerate folks to get in.
And then once they get in, it's like, oh, now I'm in. I'm gonna like I have all this momentum behind me, this pent up demand to like do all the stuff. Okay, mm-hmm. That's cool.
You might find tricky. People like that on Twitter because there's a lot. Just put the hashtag like build in public.
Yeah, totally.
There's a bunch of people on Twitter. doing that.
Build in public. Okay.
Or building in public. I'm not sure what the hashtag that they use, but there's a lot of people using that.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. I'm just looking to see if I could find one.
That's okay. I get it. It's I've definitely come up against it. We don't.
Yeah. You might also find, I don't know if it'd be on Product Hunt. No, they probably would have released the product on Product Hunt. Do you know Product Hunt, Ben?
Vaguely. I've heard of it. I've been to the site. I don't remember what it is though. What is it?
It's like, this is where like, kind of bootstrapped founders launch their products.
Oh, cool.
And these are the top ones launching today. It's like you won an award. It's like the Amazon bestseller award, you know, just like for launching your book. You kind of get that if you just launch it, you're the most popular one for the day. You get the number one Product Hunt listing for the day. So for some folks, that's, you know, that's really helpful for them to get initial traction. But I think that most of these are, I mean, they're all like available to join, you know, they're not going to be pre sign up. So that might not be helpful, but it's a cool way to look at like a bunch of different people's approach to, SaaS. That's pretty. Yeah. Good question. Denise, did you have something else?
I was going to mention that as far as I don't have a project for copywriting right now other than my own. So I spent probably 2 weeks trying to write copy for my own website. And I decided that that was just taking too long. So I put my website up and there is a paragraph in it. Cool. I would just work on it later because I'm going to move into outreach. But
good for you.
Yeah.
Outreach is more important than a perfect website.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I basically was just the appointment page, and I'm going to start doing LinkedIn outreach and that kind of, you know, like reaching out to my warp network, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I was going to ask if you have any ideas for our own copywriting.
Yeah, we have a full template.
Okay. For the website?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Chomney, okay. Can you grab the template for Denise? The Fractional CMO site template. Yeah. It's like a Mad Lib, and it'll definitely get you started. The most important thing is that the headline of it punches people between the eyes with exactly who you're perfect fit for.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And then if you want to take that and run it through ChatGPT and get some, you know, different variations on it, you're welcome to. If everyone copies it directly, it's fine. It just doesn't, it looks a little stamped out, you know? So maybe you put a little pizzazz into it when you have time. And if you want to do that in 6 months, it's fine. You don't have to do it today. You know, just launch the template is exactly as we've given it to you. And then over 6 months, you'll get better and all that.
Awesome. Thank you.
Interesting. Huh. Cool. This is neat. This is a super pretty website, John.
Somebody brought this up on one of these forums like a couple weeks ago, and it's really cool because it like rates them. And what I found really interesting about it is like the use of punctuation, how that changes. Like if you type in anything and then put like dot, dot, dot after it, like almost always the punctuation adds a higher rating or open rate that I guess they've done a bunch of info on this. It's cool.
Cool. Interesting.
It also tells you why you lost points. You know, like what are the things that like were detracting? So even if it's like you don't like their suggestions, you can be like, oh, right. If I try and angle it this way, it'll do better.
Yeah, I don't like this though. I mean, to me, this is a much softer subject line than the first, whatever. Worth testing. Yeah, that's very cool. That's neat. Similar to this, there's good sales emails. Did I write that right? Yeah. This is what SaaS companies have sent for emails. So we could take a look at Trademark Now and see their cold emails. And then their follow-up on day 3 and then day 8. So helpful if you're like stuck writing copy. You're like, hey guys, we need to do a 3-part cold email outreach campaign. And someone's like, what are the emails? And you're like, I could write them or I could just swipe them from Lucidchart and you know, these other companies. Take these guys and rewrite them for our company. Send that out. You probably get 80% of it done just from that. What's up, Sam?
So I have a question about copy that's meant for like a highly technical scientific audience. We're redoing a website for the battery client, and the audience is like these PhD nerd tech software people, or not hardware people technically. And I'm using some of the competitors / other websites that are selling to this space. But it's a bit tricky because I don't fully understand a lot of like what I'm selling in terms of the copy. This gets like highly technical about like cathode and anode materials and how we do DRT and EIS testing and all this stuff. And I'm just like, I mean,
sure.
Okay. So what's your recommendation in finding someone who crosses over the copy, but also technical world? Like,
yeah.
It seems like I have like no idea where to find that.
So just a quick kind of global thought for everyone here. The best copywriters are the people who have a lived experience of the thing that they're talking about. I should never sell a woman's weight loss product. Like, I'm just the wrong guy to sell it, you know? And you see plenty of men trying to sell it and they just like don't get a woman's experience. So like think through that when you look to find a copywriter. So I think that's a really prudent question. How do we find a copywriter? How do you find a copywriter that knows the market? I wonder if you can, you might be able to. You might be able to find a content writer who knows the market, who can kind of extol the benefits of the batteries and what sets them apart. And then the copywriter comes in and puts some teeth in it. 90% in with the content writer, 10% with the copywriter. Do you think?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Could you find them on periodicals? Like, is there Battery Insider magazine? And yeah, there's like,
that's a good
someone idea. Who's written all that stuff, and you could go hire them for $250 to write an article.
Yeah, that's a good idea because ultimately, like, I'm splitting this into kind of two phases of selling, like the headline, right? Which shouldn't be technical. Like, the headline we're going with is just like battery decisions faster. Like, that's just what the software does. It gets you to make battery decisions faster. But then from there, it's like,
that's good.
Okay, but now the next layer, which is where the technical writing is going to be involved, is like, why, right? Like, what are the problem? Like, what's the problems? What's the solution? All the things we're talking about, like, you know, some of it I can do, like risk reduction, proof is just quotes, calls to action, like, cool, get started. You know, like those are pretty straightforward, but the sort of problem
solution. The person has to know. Yeah.
It's this one's been a bit tricky. Again, a downside of not being in my niche. But it's a fascinating business, which is why I took on this client. I'm actually really enjoying it.
Cool. Yeah. When I see technical stuff, I just bought a circuit board. Mm-hmm. It's this thing. I bought this T-TWR, which, like, why would you name it that? It's like a little walkie-talkie. But they don't tell you what you can do with it. Nothing in the description tells you what you can do with it. There's like nothing at all. So like I have to guess everything. I had to find some firmware that was interesting on GitHub and then read the issues and then go search forums and get on Discord and figure out like the version that I want and all that kind of stuff. Ultimately, I was able to find it and ordered it and, you know, it's what I wanted. But like it required me to do so much work. I want to see a product listing that's comprehensive, that tells me about different use cases, that it like shows me kind of the excitement of like what the thing can do. And batteries aren't exciting, but there's something exciting about the process of working with you guys. There's a major pain point there. It's just a faster decision so they can move on with their day. Is that all that it is?
No. And that's where I'm trying to refine the message. It's like, what are these scientists struggling with? And like right now they're taking terabytes of Excel data and trying to manually pluck out graphs out of them in Excel. Like that can all be automated and done in one click, like saving like a month worth of, of work that a PhD is doing, right? So like, that's what I'm trying to extract out of all the science language. It's like, okay, what is this actually doing for these scientists?
Mm-hmm.
Which ultimately comes down to very human needs. Like me as a PhD, I'm wasting my time. It's a pain in the butt. I don't like doing internal tools or admin, right? Like it's sure. Basic. It seems to be actually pretty basic stuff. Just hard to like dissect that out. And then eventually like, the PhDs are going to want to understand like, well, how is that doing that? Right. Like
sure.
It's a very like most consumer audiences that I'm used to are just like, oh yeah, sure. Let me try it out. It's $1 or $5 or whatever. Click, go, done, sold.
Right.
This is a $5,000 a month software. So it's a very high priced enterprise sale, which is very different in a highly technical market.
Right. Makes sense. I think of like pharmaceutical sales reps. If you ever met one who's just becoming one, like they're studying really, really hard. Yeah. Like they're pretty much getting their MD in order to.
Yeah. So the finding technical writers from these publications seems to be a pretty good way to go.
And they're probably pretty cheap, I would think too.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, someone could write you like the most killer nerdy thing for like $200 something. Okay. Like second nature. And then you get someone else that comes in on top of it and just puts some teeth in it.
Cool. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Hey, there's a whole other piece of copywriting that we didn't really discuss, which is around just design, like the design elements of it. We talked about it kind of previously before in landing pages. Design's really important when it comes to copy. Like there's a woman, Lori Holler, who kind of led the direct response design space. Her company's called like Manufacturing Response or something. She's married to a great copywriter. Designing Response is her company. She's married to a copywriter named David Deutsch, who's one of these like killer copywriters. And she would take good copy and make it look attractive to get people to read it. So good copy in and of itself, critical. And then designing it in such a way that it's like easy to read, great. Sam, if you go get this copy written or the content written, and then you get some teeth in it with copy, but it's just kind of just like heavy and just paragraphs and it's all the same font size. It's going to be tough to consume, but if it's a little bit more engaging and the way it's laid out, I think you're going to find a higher response rate. So finding someone who can do that work is important.
The best example I've found is sort of this company, which is in this space. They kind of do a pretty good job with design layout and kind of being simple yet technical at the same time, if that makes any sense.
Cool.
I don't know if anyone else here is having this problem with like highly technical sales or marketing messaging.
Sam, I just put something in the chat. Years ago, I worked at a biocomplexity institute, and it's just a small little nuance to what Casey already said. But I asked my colleagues, the scientific ones, who they followed, what publications they looked at, what journals they read, and then more specifically, who published the articles they liked the best and like the PhDs that wrote them. And then once they got those, I had a nice little hefty list, and I just reached out to them and said, yo, can you help me? And some of them did. Because they're, you know, they're reporters looking for a side hustle. Yeah. So they're more than happy to make some extra cash on the side.
Sure. Yeah, they are usually pretty underpaid, aren't they?
Yeah, a little bit. I used to be a reporter. We didn't get a lot of money.
Yeah.
Another place to find copywriters, copycheap.com. Kevin Rogers runs that. And he's got like a cadre of copywriters that are available to hire. It's great. He's a killer.
Cool. Thanks everyone.
Yeah. Awesome. I just like one parting thought on copywriters. Sorry, Tom, to talk negatively, but copywriters sometimes think they're hotter than they are. You know, they're going to try to charge like super top dollar on stuff. And like, they certainly can be worth it. But a copywriter whose job it is to like do all the research and then write all the copy, it's going to be the most expensive, but if you get the research done by somebody else and then they propose that to the copywriter and the copywriter just like rewrites the headline and adds some other elements to it to make it more effective, it's probably your best kind of cost versus speed or cost versus accuracy. Because like left alone, copywriters are going to want hefty fees plus, if they're savvy, like a percentage of sales. And that can be just like uncomfortable for businesses to have, to give that away. So be careful. Be careful of copywriters. Yeah, they can be pricey for sure. Awesome. Yeah, that makes sense. Best copywriters won't want to do their own research. Yeah, it really depends on what you're writing the copy for. I mean, if it's for ads, I think that there's more to be said about just getting, you know, if it's Facebook ads, just like get you good UGC, get a new ad a day created. Like that's more important than hiring a top-tier copywriter. If you've got a decent offer that's already converting. If your offer isn't converting and you need a copywriter to help you kind of rethink it, that could be something else. But certainly copywriters for email copy, for long form stuff, for advertorials. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's good, Tom. Okay, cool. Well, thank you all for being here. If you all have any questions around your quarterly plan, you want to chat about that, hit me up in the lab. The team, we're all eager to help you on that. Make sure that you're on the right track. You should be right now booking your biggest client in for a quarterly plan pitch call, like ASAP, this week or next week. You absolutely have to have presented your quarterly plan by the 29th. That's Friday next week. So make sure that's on the calendar so that you're confident and you can move into April. You'll spend your first 2 weeks in April really kind of like leaning hard on your client, pushing hard on the team, getting everyone focused, making sure that everything's on track so that you can start leaning back as the quarter progresses and have less energy there. So either you can chill out over this next quarter in the middle of it, or you can work on your business to win your next big client, increase your prices, reduce the hours that you work, whatever the thing is that you want to solve for. All right, y'all have questions, let me know in the lab. Thanks for being here. See you later. Thanks, Steve. See ya.